why. This time tomorrow, 9 o'clock tomorrow, Nick Caserio, Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager, will be meeting with the media to discuss the 53-man roster. I would imagine, Seth, that Joe Mixon will be a major topic at the press conference. I say all that to say we're going to carry the press conference live here on Sports Radio 610. Nick Caserio meeting with the media tomorrow. Things to keep an eye on today, obviously the cuts that are going to come. Texans have to get down to 53 by 3 o'clock today. Per Adam Schefter, they are shopping Cam Robinson, or at least looking into possible trade scenarios for him. I don't know. Actively they're shopping him, but that's out there now. That's a thing to watch today as well.
I think the thing with Cam Robinson real quick is that I don't know. I've just seen some people kind of almost frame it like, oh, this is something the Texans are trying to do before final cuts. I think it's very likely that maybe they've talked to Cam Robinson and they're open to trading him, but it's something that could extend all the way till the trade deadline. Cam's on a one-year deal, and if Trent Brown is healthy and they feel like Trent Brown's ready to go, then they have a swing tackle that can play both sides, and then everything. So I don't think there's necessarily a level of urgency other than that right now is a time when some teams might really be thinking about it.
Yeah.
But then they can keep any dialogue open right up through the trade deadline.
Yeah, I guess without knowing how the Texans view the numbers crunch with the roster, we don't know. You and I speculate about what the roster could look like. If they have a couple of guys, a few guys that they feel are just super tough cuts for them before 3 o'clock today, then their urgency to move Cam Robinson might be amped up a little bit. We just don't know. We just don't know. But I think you're right. If he's on the team through 3 o'clock today, you're absolutely right. That does not close the door on trading Cam Robinson by any means.
Right, and it doesn't. And I think that this is the kind of thing that if it's leaked, it was probably an intentional leak, and that Cam Robinson is in on it. It's not a surprise to him. I'd be surprised if this is a surprise to him.
Yep. Will Anderson Jr. was on the Greenlight podcast. That's Chris Long's podcast. Chris Long sits down with folks, chats some football, does a great job. This was last Thursday. It sounds like they had this conversation because Will had just gotten off the practice field with the Lions. This was Will Anderson Jr. He's had a chance to go against Ariante Ursary quite a bit throughout camp. This is Will's impression on what he's seen from the rookie left tackle thus far.
How's the rookie Ursary?
He's strong.
He's making some headlines.
Yeah, he's strong, man. And before we even get to the football part of what he does on the field, I love his mindset and what he's about and who he wants to be. He wants to be the greatest at his position. He loves to learn. He loves to soak up knowledge. And I think it means everything to him because he pulls me and Daniil after practice to come talk to him. And I was like, if you want to be great, those are the things you're doing, especially somebody like Daniil, like that's been in the league, gets double-digit sacks, going against him every day. But, man, you talk about being a mauler on the field. CJ told me, like, I didn't even notice, but he was like, Tate texted me. He's like, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to kill for you, everything. Yeah. Like, and that's what you have to have as an O-lineman. Like, you have to have that type of mentality as an O-lineman, man. And he has all the tools to be one of the greats in his league.
Yeah, and we had played that clip from CJ last year where he told that story about Ariante saying, I'll die on that line for you, or whatever he said to him. I think when Shelby Coppedge asked Will during the game at half in the second half in the preseason game, she asked, are there any rookies that stand out to you? And Will Anderson brought up Ariante Ursary very, very quickly. And he's really been impressed with him. Daniil Hunter had said some very positive things about him when I talked to him at West Virginia. And I think the biggest thing, echoing what Daniil said and what Will said in that in-game interview is that he cares about his technique. And it's for a big guy. A lot of times when you're a big guy in college, you get away with just bullying guys and kind of manhandling them. That's not what Ariante Ursary does. I mean, he has that ability to bully guys, or at least in college he did. But he uses his hands really well. You can tell that he's working at his technique. He moves. He's deceptively fast is a weird word for an offensive lineman, but he covers a lot of ground deceptively effectively. And I'm really excited. I think he's, when you factor in his physical traits with everything that Will Anderson just said, I think he might end up being a really, really good steal as a second-round pick.
Yeah.
Remember the reports on Ariante Ursary from Daniel Jeremiah, I believe, said that some teams had him graded as a first rounder. Other teams thought he was a third or fourth rounder.
It was Todd and McShay. It was Todd McShay. Yeah, I believe. Well, I know McShay was all over Ursary. So Jeremiah might have been too. I remember McShay saying what you're talking about right now.
Yeah. So I remember because my first impression of Ursary when I watched him was, I don't know, man, he looks kind of stiff. This was way back when during the college football season.
Yeah.
And then when I went back and watched him again leading up to the draft, I realized, oh, okay, wait, no, he moves a lot faster than it looks like he's moving.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's what happens with long-limbed guys, too. It's kind of like when you think that some of these centers in basketball aren't all that athletic, and you realize, oh, well, no, it's because they're running on a court also next to Steph Curry and whatnot, and because their limbs – they're covering so much ground with each step that they are actually a lot faster than you give them credit for. That's what Ariante Ursary is. He moves really well for a guy his size.
Yeah, no, he does. And it looks like the Texans, you know, after drafting lineman after lineman with high picks the last few years, looks like they got one right here with Ariante Ursary early on.
I mean, I don't know if it balances out the universe or not, but I just Kenyon Green getting released by the Eagles yesterday. It's hard to get over that one, man.
Yeah.
Just when you had Kyle Hamilton sitting right there.
Yep.
And you trade down a couple spots and end up with an offensive lineman who's done nothing at all. And Kyle Hamilton's that's still a tough pill to swallow. But Ariante Ursary, I think he might be the real deal.
Here's how I sleep at night with that, Seth. And you know nobody wanted Kyle Hamilton on this team more than I did.
Yeah.
This is how I sleep at night. I look at it as if they had drafted Kyle Hamilton in 2022. He would have somewhere along the way in that season made a game-changing play that would have moved the Texans from the number two pick, down to like the fourth or fifth pick, and they wouldn't have gotten C.J. Stroud.
That's a good point.
That's how I sleep at night. I don't know if it's – obviously, we'll never know if it's true, but that's how I sleep at night.
I think that's exactly what Nick had written down in his notes.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right,
Hamilton, too good to tank.
Too good. Yes. That's right. We need C.J. Stroud. Here's Will Anderson. Talked about Ariante Ursary, but this is Will Anderson talking with Chris Long about the Texans offensive line in general. What's the biggest difference that you've seen?
You see them coming off the ball harder, executing even more, and the precision is just there, man. But they are way more grittier, man. Like Titus, he's done a really good job of stepping up, man, and getting those guys rolling in the pieces that they're added, man. Like some of these double teams, these crunches.
Yeah, feeling them.
You're feeling them, man. And I'm like, and you know, me and Titus had a little back and forth one day in practice, and I don't really usually talk in practice for like, but I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. Come on then. Like, you know what I'm saying? But like, that's what makes you great. Like that competitive edge that like keeps pushing you to be better, that keeps like, we can talk today. Okay, come on, let's go. Like, those are the type of days that you need, especially in camp, man. And like, I'm super proud of that group and to see where they're coming. I think Coach Cole is doing a really good job of like giving them that energy, man. Like you hear them in Indy yelling and screaming, like,
that's what I'm doing, push-ups after practice one day. I'm like, oh, all right.
Yeah, man, it's cool to see.
They're way grittier. And this is yet another one where, you know, D'Amico, his answers about the offensive line have been words with ER at the end of it. You know, comparing it to last year, you know, just it's better, it's this, it's better at that. And I get mad listening to that. Like, what? Where was the grit last season? Do I need to just look forward, Seth, and just not look back at last year when it comes to this?
Well, I think that we've already acknowledged that, D'Amico is, like any rookie head coach, is going to make some mistakes. Any coach anywhere is always going to make some mistakes. No coach has a perfect year ever. You know, even if they win every game, they still made mistakes along the way.
Yeah.
D'Amico as a young coach is the most injurious mistake he made was hiring Bobby Slowick and I think Chris Strausser as the offensive line coach.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that weren't quite in line with the way that D'Amico operates.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it just does. It comes from the top down. Kaylee and Popovich are blue collar dudes. You know, Slowick is not a blue collar dude.
No.
And Chris Strausser, the offensive line coach, always looked like a guy that was what he was, a guy who's contemplating retirement. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that same verve necessarily as Cole Popovich. I think Kaylee and Popovich are just more cut from the same cloth as D'Amico Ryan.
Yeah.
So that alone, I'm not saying that that's all you need, but it does feel more like of a fit for the Texans and the way that D'Amico wants to operate than what they had before.
Yeah, it's just wild that the grit was such a major issue with a coach like D'Amico Ryan. You know, like that, the thing that he might be that he would be able to recognize in a coach.
Right.
I would think it would be the grittiness. But he had a relationship with Slowick. I get all that. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And there's also that element of you don't know what you don't know. Yep. And DeMeco spent a lot of time with the defense the last couple of years. This year in training camp, he's spending a lot of time with the offense. It's just one of those things. I think that it was going to take a year or two to right the course, but I think he's on the right course now.
Yeah. Last one from Will Anderson Jr. This is the one that was making the rounds. This is the one. This is the cut that Chris Long himself put out from that interview. What did you learn from the 2024 season?
Execution has been the biggest thing that we've talked about all offseason long, precision and execution. And CJ said something like, you have fun when you execute. And I wholeheartedly believe that, man. But like in these games, like those teams that's winning the championships or winning the Super Bowl, they're executing at the highest level. Like everybody is locked in. Everybody is detailed. Like it's no room for error. And that's like the biggest thing that we took away from that. Like it's no room for error. Like everybody has to be locked in on their job all four quarters.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me. The one common trait amongst really good NFL head coaches, for me, there's different personality types that work. There's different styles and schemes that work. But there's a maniacal obsession with detail that you just don't get. And it has to be almost maniacal because you have to set standards that aren't like the normal human standards. And whether it's Tony Dungy or Bill Belichick or anybody else, they've all got very different personalities. At the end of the day, you need to execute the finer details better than your opponent, because all the teams are relatively equally skilled. You might have a few better skill possession players here or there, but you just, by being maniacally obsessive about the details and having guys that are that way, that's where you get your edge. And that, like, those are the things that come down to it in the fourth quarter. I think DeMeco's done a really good job of getting players that are kind of maniacal about that. And it's cool to watch because it's very much the exception, not the rule, that you get. I think the coolest thing about some of the impact players that the Texans have is that the best players on the team also seem to be really solid dudes. And I was talking to somebody the other day that had come, you know, he's been on a few teams in the NFL, and he's talking about the Texans versus other teams. And you know, there's a lot of other teams where it's the exact opposite, where the best players are also the biggest a-holes on your team.
Yeah.
And that's a rough place to be in, man. It's tough. It's like there's room for one or two divas, but when all your best players are concerned about numero uno and else, it's really tough to have a good environment. I think they've done a really good job of squashing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, people weighing in on the text page about college courses. Seth and I each picked a college course to take that was a unique one from FBS schools here. So these are some courses people have been taking. Someone said, I took hip-hop philosophy at A&M, way harder than I expected. It's the only class I ever had to drop in college.
Oh, really?
Hip-hop philosophy. Wow. Yeah.
Well, a lot of those easier classes, the fun classes, sometimes the professors know that, oh, there's a lot of people think they're going to take this and it's just going to be a walk in the park. And it does end up, it's kind of like running wind sprints, you know? If you go into, at least, I think people that played sports can appreciate this. Like, let's say you're supposed to run 1,600-yard wind sprints. If you go into it thinking like, oh, I'm in shape, this is no big deal. Oh, it comes up and bites you.
Yes.
But if you go into it knowing that it's going to be hard, then it's a lot of you're more prepared for it. People go into that thinking they're just going to breeze through those wind sprints, and then all of a sudden Jay-Z jumps up and kicks you in the jump.
That's right, Jay-Z.
Yeah.
I took the history of baseball when I was at Texas Tech. It was one of the hardest courses I took in college, and I bet I know why, because this is a dynamic you pointed out earlier in the show. I bet it's because the person signed up for that thing, and I'm a baseball fan. I'll do great in this class.
Yeah.
And it ends up, it's history of baseball. So it ends up being about how woven into the fabric of society baseball was back during the Great Depression and during World War II. And it turns into sort of
a history class.
It's a history adjacent. A lot of adjacent historical things that have nothing to do with baseball on the diamond, but they're woven. Baseball's woven into them because of the
time
frame. But
also, you know, the type of professor that might be teaching that class might be an old school baseball nerd, where it was kids. You got to appreciate this. Back in the day, every high school had at least one kid that could tell you every World Series champion, every league champion, every league MVP. He could remember the box score of a game from 2 months ago. Yeah. It was more about regurgitation of stats more so than it was, you know, thinking about things and analyzing things. And I would imagine that that professor might have a bunch of, he might pop a quiz on you where you got to remember what Babe Ruth's batting average was in the seventh year of his career or
something. I would
just
do
super arcane like
hell
that.
Yeah. All right. Football talk in this segment on Sports Radio 610, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Up next, first-time head coaches disclose advice they've been given by other coaches and the biggest curveballs they've gotten early on in their careers. As a Texan fan, I loved hearing this curveball for another coach in the division. We will have that for you coming up next.